Chairman Woods.
Here.
Secretary Scheifele. Vice Chair Cushing Adams.
Here.
Director Duquette.
Here.
And Director Heath will not be here this evening.
Correct. David had a prior commitment, so he won't be able to make it. So, public input, please. Okay. They'll take this for public input. And, Treasurer's report. Looks like it has Joe's name attached.
It does.
I'm sorry, minutes.
Oops,
I hit that one.
Sorry, I've got a comment.
With respect to the minutes of June, point of clarification, it may or may not have been on the recording. At the end of last month's meeting, we adjourned to move into a non-public session, and while everyone was going around and room, it became clear that we did not need to go into non-public session. So we did not go into non-public session. There are no non-public session minutes. So with that, and that is annotated on the copy of the minutes, I move to approve the June 20th, 2018 minutes. With the escalator.
Okay. Discussion. I have one small correction. Wesley's name is spelled L-I-U.
Right on cue.
I will correct that.
Okay, thank you.
My apologies,
Wes.
I just spelled
your name. So, do we have any other discussion for the minutes? Okay, with that, all those in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Now, Treasurer's
report. The moment we've all been waiting for.
Treasurer's report, please.
Okay, so this just happens to be, correct, Susan, the final fiscal 2018 Treasurer's report, June of 2018.
In our audit.
Can't wait. I'll jot that down. So this is my first time kind of reviewing the financials with the group here. So I just this afternoon went through and kind of highlighted a few areas of interest, and then we'll just kind of do the over and under summary. So for two items I noted on income, we have a bit of a deficit on fuel flowage fees. And I'm presuming that would tick and tie with our traffic count, I guess. We were about $4,000 year-to-date under budget. Can't think of anything else that would be influencing that.
And even as you have even the higher traffic counts, they don't all get fuel there all the
right
time.
So it's probably not a direct correlation.
Right.
Or they're more efficient. And one other line item, we've kicked this around a few times, is the big deduct on the New Hampshire state registration fees. I know that was something, Chris, I think you were looking into, and it's probably going to be what it's going to be. So
I'm looking into that as well. I did a open records request to Bureau of Aeronautics to retrieve registration data for Nashua for 2014 through 2018, and also to get more information about how they process those numbers. So I'm still looking into that. Is that TBD?
Yeah, just so everybody knows, that's a $21,000 hit to the budget. $21,000 under on that, so it's a pretty big number that jumped out. So just for quick reference, our income is right about 100% to budget. So we're like 101 month over month and about 100.8 to year, so right on target. On the expense side of the ledger, a couple of items that jumped out. Big underrun, which is good on this part of the ledger, of $27,000 on part-time wages. So obviously just didn't have as many part-time people. About $11,000 under on building and ground maintenance, so that's good. And about $6,100 under on airfield equipment. So all monies that were budgeted but weren't used.
Question?
Okay. Kind of just continuing down the expense column, and I believe Director Heath brought this up last month. We have a big underrun on marketing, and I believe we bumped our marketing budget, which had been around $6,000 every year, to $10,000 for next year. So I presume he's going to help spearhead using some of those dollars in our marketing efforts. And then again, month over month, we are about 72% to budget, so that's good on expenses. And the yearly comparison is about 88%. So good on our runs on both of those. And that's about it for the financials. So good news. Looks like we closed out the year in good shape. So I put a motion forward to accept the June 2018 financials pending audit.
And discussion?
Is the $11,000 under for maintenance because we didn't do it or because we didn't need it?
We did do a lot of maintenance. Which line item was that? Because I know that we were getting close on
building and ground maintenance.
Building and ground maintenance. They were kind of the airfield equipment. Hang on, I don't remember that.
Is that going to pull it out of court?
Yeah.
Susan, can you hold this one?
This one, oh, yeah. Okay, there we go. You get the line above it highlighted. That's.
Well, no, I don't. You have your glasses.
Building and grounds maintenance. Yeah, we were watching the money because on the equipment maintenance, we were getting close, and if we needed some more money for equipment maintenance, which we did do, we did a lot of that last year, we would have used some of this. And, yeah, there's some building and grounds maintenance that can be done in the future. So that's why there's excess money there.
You never know when we're going to need to rent a craft fair machine or something like that. So that
right. And we still have some actual the building itself maintenance to do. But, like I said, we're getting close on the budget for all the equipment. Snow removal equipment, the trucks.
Oh, your welding and crafting and
everything in there. There was a lot of work that Matt did back in the fall.
Right.
So it ate it up really quick. Yeah. So I love these glasses. By
I was going to say, I don't know what to say.
Any other discussion on on the June 2018 financial statements? With that, all those in favor of approving the June 2018 financial statements subject to audit?
Aye.
Aye. And all those opposed? Okay. Those are approved. Communication.
We have four communications to the airport authority, two of which are from the New Hampshire Department of Transportation. One is a response to Director Wood's request for aircraft registration data. Which he commented on last thing he provided late. And the other one is a letter to the airport manager with response to with regard to some of the inspections that were conducted, some comments, contains photographs, etc., and information. The third is a request to sign working to sublet 101 Winley Road. And the fourth is a letter from an engineering firm representing the folks who are working on a subdivision of 75 Pine Hill Road, which is a residential area at the intersection of Pine Hill and Sharon Road. Those are all four communications we have.
Okay, so let's see. Moving on to reports. First up is the tower report. Here we go. So, very broadly speaking, we had 6,294 operations in June. That's 241 operations, or 7% year over year. I'm sorry. 4% year over year. And you know, I won't go into great detail on the nature of the ops and stuff like that. But since the ops are up, we would like to see that. You know, it's always good news. And with that, airport manager.
Okay, just so everybody knows, we were trying to make this as brief as possible tonight because we have some folks that are joining us tonight from TerraFusia that will give a presentation. So I'm going to go through this real fast. And we also, just so everybody knows, we eliminated the engineers' reports from tonight. And Matt and Nick are in Florida because we gave them the night off. But Armand has very kindly stepped in their place in case we have any engineering questions from TerraFusia this evening. Recent events. Last week we had the Commemorative Air Force Air Power History Tour featuring Fifi, the B-29 Superfortress, a C-45, and a T-6 Texan. And we had the best week of the summer weather-wise. It was absolutely beautiful the whole time, and we believe, well, they believe that they smashed the records for all-time largest amount of crowds, attendance, etc. And I was there all weekend, and I can tell you that the people were crawling on the fences to get in. The lines were all the way down Perimeter Road. It was just an unbelievable event. Anybody that was around saw this. I know Sandy saw it in a restaurant. It's just a great event. They were very happy to be here, and we're very happy to have them. And they will be back. So that's a good thing. We also had WSMN Radio broadcasting Wednesday through Friday live on the field. And they interviewed some of our tenants and our restaurant owner, Sandy. She was a big hit on the radio. And we had a really good time with them, and that really helped the advertising. They claimed to have about 75,000 listeners, and so that was huge. We had media coverage from WMUR-TV as well as the National Telegraph. So very happy with that event. Upcoming events, August 20th through the 27th, I have the Commemorative Air Force Flying Legends of Victory Warbird Tour coming, featuring Made in the Shade, a B-25 Mitchell bomber. And it's from the same organization, but it's strictly going to be the B-25 alone. There won't be any other aircraft with it. They were actually going to base the show in Portsmouth, but at the last minute they decided to cancel because Portsmouth was hitting them with approximately a $4,000 fee for TSA security, and they said no way. So I invited them to come to Nashua, and I told them that I provide the security and it's free. So we will see them, like I said, the 20th through the 27th of August. September 14th and 15th, we've talked about these in the past. The 14th, we have the city-sponsored Summer Fun Movie Night. It'll be featuring Disney Pixar's Coco this year. And on the 15th, the following day, these are all weather permitting, the 15th, the Summer Fun 2018 Wheels and Wings event. And as everybody knows, that was a huge hit last year. Again, record-setting last year. We had fantastic weather, and turnout was great, so we've picked a similar date for it this year in September. Where in past years, it was in August. Other items of interest? None, really. I'll talk briefly. We had an inspection by the DOT about a month or so ago, and it was a land use and hangar use inspection. We have yet to receive the results of that, any report from the DOT or the FAA. We have received one report that Mr. Scheifel just talked about, and there was a hangar on the field, hangar building 15, hangar 27, that they thought was not in substantial compliance, and they gave us some guidelines as to how to rectify that. and the owner and a gentleman that he has hired have been working on that nonstop since then, and to bring it up to compliance with FAA hangar use policy. And they came in and did another inspection about a week ago, and they say it's still not up to substantial compliance, but they were happy with the progress that was made. They'll be returning on August 1st to do a final inspection, which happens to be the day that the hangar is turning over to a new owner, and that's why they chose that date. So that's all. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a question with respect to fuel flow. Is it a coincidence that January to June of this year, jet fuel is identical for every month?
When they buy their fuel, they buy, Susan, how many gallons at a time is it? These sales are based on the purchases of the fuel that they make. Sometimes they sell it all, sometimes they don't.
Used by aviators.
It's what was purchased by the
aviators. Yes.
And the tank holds the same amount, so that's why it's real similar.
Anything else for Chris? Okay, so committees, master plan committee. This is on hold for a little bit. Our next scheduled meeting is August 2. I'm waiting material from Matt so that I can distribute that master plan up to committee. We will meet in roughly 2 weeks. Old business, there is none. And new business. With that, I would like to invite Tara Fuji to address.
So if you guys want to see the screen, I think we need to shift over to
get miles and miles. Oh, we, ever do.
We couldn't get it going. Oh, really? The system won't reset.
Really?
We didn't pay enough taxes.
The
robust screen.
It's double secret. If I set it up one way, I can see what's coming next. So I know what to talk about in the next slide. But thanks for having us.
Would it be easier? Maybe to put the here? We can set out there. No?
I think everybody can see it, though.
We're easy to work with. So let me just go back a bit. What I'm going to talk about tonight is something that just is educational in the history of the company. And Phil, who's been working up here, is going to talk about our plans for our operations in Nashua in particular. So he's going to focus on what we're going to plan on doing here, and I'm going to tell you about the history of the company. I should say that Phil's our chief pilot, and he's done a yeoman's job for the last 6 months or more, going around looking for the ideal location for us to do our flight operations. And we settled on here in Nashua, Marfield. Right? He took a look at it. We're based in Woomer, Mass. I don't know if everybody knows that. That's where our center of operations is for engineering and for prototyping. And our facility company's occupied for a number of years. We've also recently opened up a research center in California, nearby Silicon Valley. We have a number of engineers in Petaluma, California, that are doing the conceptual design for us for the next generation vehicles that we'll be producing, and I'll show you some of that tonight. And we just started working on the third generation of vehicles. So I guess the message is that Terrafugia is a permanent entity. It's a company that's going to be around for many years. We are well-funded. We have grown from, I joined the company just over a year ago when there were 19 employees. There were two people in California who were the founders, two founders of the company. There were 17 people in Woodward that were keeping the company alive and doing the engineering work. And today we're more than 200. So in a year we've grown from 19 to something more than 200. And I really don't even know the number right now. It's kind of a moving target, right? I've got people in China that are doing manufacturing. I've got people in California that are doing research, conceptual design. And I've got people in Massachusetts who are doing our detailed design and prototyping, right? So it's a really fast-moving business that we're in now. And because of the commitment for us, it's one that we'll start with this product that you can see on screen now, what we call a transition. It's a flying car. And we will grow into other areas that will answer different kinds of missions for operations worldwide. And in fact, the transition is our first step. It's a vehicle that can be driven and it can fly. And the next generation vehicle is similar, but with a different focus. Not for general aviation operations, but for fleet operations, like we're doing air taxi services. So big numbers of aircraft that are in operations. It's really interesting because this whole market hasn't existed until now, right? We're really at the forefront of creating a new market. And I'll tell you, the example I like to use is, back in 1959, the aviation world was revolutionized when the 707 was introduced. Right, from the first time you could go intercontinental, you could go trans-Pacific, you could go transatlantic with an airliner, and it changed the world. Right? I couldn't have my job today if that wasn't in existence because my family lives near Philadelphia, and I commute somewhere every week. Right, I come to Warren, or I go to California, or I go to China. Or I go somewhere else. Right? A couple of weeks ago, I was in Mexico looking at a factory. Right? I couldn't do my job. We couldn't do this business without that invention. Went many, many years ago. We're really at the same position right now. I can tell you that the FAA accepts the fact that the next generation of vehicles is coming. That there's no stopping. We just learned yesterday that there's more than 100 different designs underway to fill that urban air mobility. Operation, right, that need, that they're coming, we're happening. Companies like ours are going to be producing aircraft. So it's really a very exciting time in the aviation industry, right? Something that hasn't happened for many, many years, for like 60 years, and won't happen again for many years after that. But you can see that the tsunami is coming, right? The wave is here. A year ago, there were 20 companies in this business talking about doing something. Today, there's 100. Right? It's really unbelievable what's going on. So anyway, let me talk a little bit about Terrafugia. I'll give you a little bit of background. The mission for our company is to create practical flying cars. Right? It's pretty easy. Terrafugia is an interesting name. Right? It's Latin for escape fever. Right? So it's a message that transmits what we're trying to do. The company started back in 2006 when we had the five MIT engineers do a design project and win an award. They took the money from that award and they funded the start of the company. Right? In 2009, they flew for the first time a concept aircraft, and I'll get into that a little bit more. In 2012, they flew the second generation. We've been to Oshkosh a number of times. In fact, all of us who are here tonight are going to Oshkosh to show our products on Sunday. Right, the show starts on Monday, and we'll be there. We'll be talking to people about what we're doing and when we'll be delivering product to them. In 2017, our company was acquired by the largest manufacturer of automobiles in China. And so we are a very well-funded entity. That company also owns Volvo, and they turned that company from failing automobile company to one that delivered 600,000 cars last year. The Geely company, the parent company, delivered 1.2 million cars last year and is on track to deliver 1.6 million this year. Right? And they are a multinational company. They also own Lotus Cars, who has a big sports cars, and a host of other businesses, including now almost 10% of the bank, the Mercedes-Benz company. So it's a very big company, and we are their entry into the aviation market in this flying taxi, urban air mobility kind of business. We have a very skilled bunch of people at the top of the organization. Josh Alvender is here. He's our Vice President of Engineering. Carl Dietrich, the second from the left there, is one of the founders, one of those guys who started from MIT. And he now runs our research organization in California. So he's the Chief Technology Officer, so he's still inventing, just as he did back in 2006 when we started the business. As I said, we have three different bases of operations in California, in China, and in Massachusetts. The parent company has many different businesses going on. This is just a small fraction of them. In fact, there's about 50 different businesses that they own today that they operate in all over the world. We have social media, we've been in the press. In fact, it's one of the factors that we're working on wherever we're located. And I met with the mayor of Wuhan last week, right? And they're using us in their advertising. They have several high-tech businesses in Wuhan, but they don't have any flying cars. They don't have anything, right? And that's what we are. We bring a very different dynamic to that. And here, we'll do the same thing, right? Our vehicles will be here. We can be used in advertising. We'll always be saying where we're based, right? So it's an interesting thing that's going on. I gave an interview to Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio a couple of months ago. We've done a BBC special. We're going to do an NBC special in a couple of months. Right? They're going to make a one-hour special about us as part of a series of technology episodes. And so they're going to come to us and we're going to talk to them. If we're up here, they'll come up here. We'll show them what we've got. We'll fly to your aircraft and that kind of stuff. So it's exciting and it's really interesting. We have a great play with the media. Let's talk a little bit about the transition of first product. It's flying. It's real. I said we're in the second generation of vehicles. It really was started as an idea because there were so many problems with owning a general aviation aircraft. I know you guys have lots of GA aircraft there, but what the founders saw was it's difficult to fly. They were pilots. They were VFR pilots. And then many times they canceled their trips or they had to turn around, right? They couldn't complete what they wanted to do. They said, well, how do we solve that? That's a big problem. Right? Ground transportation is a problem. You get to a small GA aircraft airport. There's 5,200 of them in the United States. What do you do when you get there? I still want to go to the hotel, the vacation home, the business, right? What do you do when you get there? It costs money for hangar storage, or your private airplane if you're lucky enough to own one. The cost of aviation fuel is much higher than going to the gas pump, right? Why is that? How do you get around that? And there's a delay at the airport between the arrival. So you get to the airport, you gotta take the aircraft out of the hangar, you gotta do all the kinds of things to get it off the ground. I said, well, here, we can come up with a solution. Here's how we do it. I have a vehicle that's both a car and a plane, right? Now, in this case, they took a very different approach, right? Because the design, we'll talk about it in a minute, it's really an airplane that's designed back to be a drivable vehicle on the roads, right? You keep it in your garage. This is a standard garage. I'll show you the pictures of that. You can pull it up to your local filling station and pump premium automobile gas into it. It's more expensive than regular, but it's a lot cheaper than that gas. Right? It obviously reduces your turn time. It removes all of the problems at your destination airport because you pull the winds up and you drive your destination, whether that's a business meeting or your vacation home. And what happens when the weather goes down? Suddenly it looks like it's IFR ahead. You land at the nearest airport, you drive the rest of the way. Right? It's got a 400-mile range whether you're flying or driving. So you can always get to where you're trying to go. As I said, they won an award in 2006 and took that prize money and started the business. Five graduate students decided they could make a go of it. The concept of flying cars is not new. The first patent was in 1918, but nobody's been successful. And what these five smart folks decided was it was because everybody started with a car and tried to make it into an airplane. And it was a terrible airplane. So what they did was they started with an airplane, and they made it into a car. And that's the philosophy, and that's the concept that we operate under. The extensive wind tunnel testing at MIT, we built prototype wings at Pole, we built the prototype airplane. In fact, in 2009, we built what they called proof of concept. It was the first version of the transition that they came up with here. It wasn't wildly successful. It took more than 100 tries to get it off the ground. So it was people with a lot of perseverance at an airport over and over again, dragging the aircraft home, fixing something, and kept on going until they actually flew it. And they learned a lot during that process. They learned so much that they decided that they needed to modify the aircraft in a number of ways. So they spent the next 3 years building the second prototype. And this aircraft incorporated all of those modifications that they had learned about, and it flew on the first try. We built something like 300 flight hours on it. We just retired a short time ago, so I can turn it into a showpiece to take to shows. Right? And we're building the next prototype right now. That'll be flying by the end of the year. So it's a flying and driving product. It takes about 40 seconds to pull the wings up. It's very fast. When you're folding them up or unfolding them, push a button, and 40 seconds later, you're ready to go. It flies 400 miles. It's about 100 miles an hour flight speed. Right? It's highway speeds for driving on the roads. And it's designed around the light sport aircraft certification by the FAA. The stuff that was created 10 years or so ago to allow home builds to become production aircraft, right? So it's a much more rapid process to bring the aircraft to the market, and it only takes 20 hours to get your sport pilot certificate as opposed to 40 for a regular pilot's license. Low operating costs are key to that, and we have some concepts about how you share the aircraft for use. Very simple system, built to be very safe, right? There's a ballistic parachute, just like a Cirrus, just like a number of other vehicles. In fact, we use the same product, the BRS system. Hang a little bit back and you get very, very easy, very simple stall characteristics. Lots of glass, so very high visibility looking out, and very simple pilot workload. It's just stick rudder and prop. So it doesn't take a high operating cost to fly it. As I said, we have the parachutes built into the product. The interesting part for us is, while all those safety features are built into the aircraft, they're also built into the car. Right? Have to do both. Have to be a car that meets the National Highway Safety Transportation Authority safety standards. So what this video is showing you is the crushable beams in the front of the car. Right? That's designed into the product. It has our seat belts and airbags and all the rest of the things that go along with the requirements to have a bulletproof vest and a roadworthy car. So we have to meet all the requirements of the FAA for like sport aircraft and all the requirements of the highway folks for an automobile. Some challenges there, right? Some things that we would actually require exceptions for. You don't want to have safety glass and windshield on an airplane. The bird hits it, you can't see out the windshield. Right, it's designed to crack and to become opaque. So we received a waiver to put an acrylic machine, so we could withstand burst. Right? A bunch of things like that we had to get around that were conflicts between cars and planes, but we've done all that. We received all those waivers to figure that out. It's only 6 seconds. It's not a big number. We've collaborated extensively with the FAA, with the highway safety folks, with the EPA, all those kinds of things, in order to get to the point where we are. And we've tapped into a large number of advisors from the FAA, from NASA, from Lockheed, those kind of places. Interestingly, as I said before, this is a chart that shows it's a representation of the number of airports. It doesn't show anything here, 5,000 airports, right? The message is that they're everywhere, right? That there's an airport within 20 miles of any destination in the United States. And this is a vehicle that's designed to operate in the United States. So you should be able to get pretty close to where you want to go. Certainly, you have 20 miles of range on the ground with the vehicle. You have 400 miles. So book your flight from one place to another and land there and drive to your destination. what we saw when we looked into this stuff is there's lots of these airports, very nice airports, right? Beautiful, picturesque vacation places. Some places out in the foreign country, and sometimes they even have a sort of a terminal. They have a 40-foot container or a single wide that they're using as their terminal. But there's no medical cars, there's no restaurants, or nothing like that. So for us, that presented it as an opportunity, right? I can fly to any of these, right? I don't have to find a rental car. I can drive to where my destination is. How does it work? It's pretty simple. Here's one of our guys in his home's garage. Right? It fits in a standard garage. You drive it down the road to the gas station, to the airport, unfold the wings. 40 seconds, you still have to do a walk around like you have to do with any aircraft, right? You have to do a pre-flight, but it doesn't take long, as you know. And off you go. Right? Fly to our destination, and you can see a bit of a visual of the cockpit of the aircraft there. Has a glass cockpit, has some instruments that are designed by us. Right in front of the pilot is a steering wheel, but when you're flying, there's a control stick. There's rudder pedals, but there's also gas pedal and brake pedal. Right? It has to have both sets of controls for the vehicle. The instrument that's right in front of the pilot is switchable. It has the appropriate indicators for driving a car when you're on the road and for flying an airplane when you're up in the air.
Vehicle that can pick you up at your home or pick
pick you up at your office, that's attached to the compartment that the parapassing are parking and drive into a heliport, vertiport, something like that, where you are disconnected from the ground vehicle and reconnected to a flight, which takes you 10 kilometers, 10 miles, 50 miles, that's where you want to go, to another vertiport or heliport, and you reverse the process. A new ground vehicle backs up to you, it connects to the compartment, the air vehicle drops it off, and presses onward for the next trip. So again, end-to-end mobility is the idea there, which is somewhat different from our competitors, right? It's door-to-door transportation that allows you to be seamless. The passengers never have to get out of the compartment. They can get on and home with their bags. You can take it to an airport or to your office or wherever you need to be through the concept of two different types of vehicles. As I said, we have designs for both cargo and passengers. In fact, we've met with the FedEx people, I've met with the UPS people, we've met with the two biggest cargo companies in China, talking about how to replace their short-haul trucks with short-haul air vehicles. Right? There's an intense level of interest in moving cargo for those express delivery services. And there's clearly more interest in urban air taxi stuff. The Uber people are funding an enormous amount of efforts to put these vehicles into production at a number of companies. They think there's a market for them alone of 5,000 vehicles a year for 10 years. So you're talking about an enormous business opportunity that's brand new. It's like nothing that's ever seen before. If you think about the highest production airliner today, the 737, they make 700 or something like that, but 500, they're waiting on schedule this year. They're about 5,000 vehicles a year coming into the market. And we're determined to take a big chunk of that business. Right? We're in a very unique position when we think we can do that. Let's see. So we have a different approach from many of our competitors, and we think this is a strong advantage. While others don't even have a ground vehicle, we have a ground vehicle that will take advantage of the autonomous capabilities of the vehicle, getting a spark and drive. And when the federal government, the state governments allow us to drive without a driver, we can shift because it'll be the same vehicle with the same operating conditions. But initially, we use a driver to operate that. Okay? In the air vehicle side, I have a pilot. I have a commercial pilot that's flying that vehicle, but it'll have the same autonomous capabilities that are being developed today. So eventually, it could become an unpiloted vehicle. And we don't think that's going to happen for many years. I think many of our competitors are going down that path and saying that 2 years from now or 3 years from now, you're going to be able to fly without a pilot of passengers. And I frankly don't believe that's going to happen. So our design goes in a different direction. Many of our competitors also think that they will be able to operate all electric from day one. So in 2020 or 2021, they're going to be flying all electric aircraft. And honestly, the technology today doesn't exist to do that. The technology exists today to fly in one of these kind of vehicles for about 20 minutes. But that doesn't address the reserve requirements, which the FAA still requires. Right? Still need that 45 minutes of reserve in your flight vehicle. So they can't even get off the ground for today's regulations. And they just say, well, we'll change the regulations, not knowing how hard it is to work with the FAA, which, and by the way, worked it for 3 years at headquarters in Washington. So our approach is very different. Everything can be produced today, everything can be operated today within the current airspace system. We're going to try to work forward, to change all that, right, to evolve the systems, but initially we can operate without any changes in any of that. Passenger part, the state-of-the-art touchscreen windows. Again, there's no operator here. The pilot is up above in the air vehicle with the driver down below. So we can have the highest tech capabilities in the cargo compartment to entertain, to let people do business, to let them work. Lots of seating configurations available for us. We have a pretty spacious operation, club seating, stadium seating, cargo compartment. That's pretty simple. That's the way people like FedEx operate. Right? They just pour the boxes into their cargo containers. We're looking at a bunch of different concepts in our research center. Some are, one on the left there is a quadrotor with a pusher prop, and so we can take off and land vertically and then transition quickly to wing-borne flight. I think this is a very big advantage in terms of efficiency, let you move fast, let you get to the next location very quickly, and then go back into rotorcraft kind of operations. The one on right is until loader is well known. It's the same kind of a process that we can go through to use vertiports, but move fast. This is the one called Lift Plus Push with the quad rotor and the pusher prop. If I can show you the concept of the so here about ground vehicles with our passenger compartment attached, coming into a local vertical to the end. And the vertical could be as small as 100 square feet. Could be an airport too. So here's our vehicle that arrived with the full load of passengers. We've optimized the design to take 2 minutes from the time that the air vehicle lands to the time it's reloaded and takes off from the next location. And that optimizes the revenue for the operator. The next one, the TF3, the third generation, we're already talking about the concepts, so we'll start the intense engineering effort in about 26, and we're going to continue to do that every 3 or 4 years. We're going to come out with a new product. That's how we become one of the leaders in this industry. Okay, so that's the history, our first product, our second product, some ideas about the future. I'm going to turn it over to Phil to talk about what our desires are to hear, but I'll be happy to answer any questions now or at the end if anybody has any issues they'd like to ask.
Have you discussed this at all with National Economic Development? Did we have who was the gentleman at our meeting?
Yeah, we had Tim Cummings, the Director of Economic Development for the city, at one of our meetings.
I think it was actually very positive for us. It was a good session with him. Very supportive. Offered to be helpful with whatever we need. Anything else?
What's the price point on those?
So the first one is on the order of a Cessna or a Cirrus, right? It's $400,000 to $500,000. We're just figuring out what that is now. And it's part of the most difficult part of the process. We've done some analysis to say what it should cost and what the market impact will be at various price points. And we're back now to what can it cost? What can we build it for? What are the costs of all the components that go into it? And you really can't get a 100% solid answer on that until you know what they all are. So I'll give you an example. We have an electric motor there, the drive system for the wheels. Today, we're procuring electric motors that are not ideal for our product because they're in existence. If we could develop something, we could get a company to develop something that is optimized for us, the price would be much lower. If we could buy in good volume, the price would be much lower. So it's a real challenge to identify what the price is in the vehicle, right? There's an added complication in aviation, right, that the cost of the product changes over time based on the learning curve. And so the first one you make takes 10,000 hours to build, and the 1,000th one you make takes 1,000 hours to build. So how do you price the vehicles, right? You have to project what the market's going to be, how many you're going to sell, what the learning curve effect is, to pick a point that says, I'm not making any money, in fact, I'm losing lots of money on the first one, and at some point, is it aircraft 50, 100, 200, I break even, and then I start to make lots of profit. Right? So it's a challenge to come up with what that number is for your initial sales. So it's a big combination. Yeah. We're working on that. Some of the guys who are here today are doing just that. They're coming up with what those numbers are for what the market will accept and what the cost will be to build the product. So I think right now what we can say is you buy a system 172, you buy a Cirrus SR 20 or 22, or you buy a transition one, and they're in the same range. Right? The second generation product is going to be much different. It's driven by a gas turbine. Right? And that alone is going to cost you $250,000 to put in your product, right? So you're talking about $1 million or $2 million for a TF2. But you're talking about 5,000 aircraft a year, then we'll chip off some piece of that, 500, 1,000, something like that. Say you make 1,000 aircraft a year, it's a $1 million a year business, right? So it's a staggering amount of industry that we're talking about putting in place, and we're right at the forefront of I'll give you another example. So, as I said, there's about 100, you know, there's 100 different vehicles in development right now. But most of them, if you look at the chart, says here's the big boys, here's the little boys. At the bottom, there's most of those 100, right? A lot of them, those startups like Terrafugi used to be. There are a dozen people, there are 20 people, sometimes they're smaller than that. And then there's guys at the top. Airbus and Boeing have decided that this is a viable market. There's an opportunity here that they don't want to pass up. And they gobbled up a couple of rule minutes, right, so that they can be in the game. And we fall like right in the middle, right? In my mind, we're fully funded. We're funded by an enormous multinational corporation. Right? But we don't have all the infrastructure that Boeing has, for instance. And I lived that life for many years. I worked for Sikorsky Aircraft for 24 years. That's a United Technologies Corporation at the time. So if you wanted to get something done, it took years. We wanted to launch a new helicopter program, which we eventually did. It took 2 years. To get approval first through the company I work for and then through the corporation. So those guys are ponderous. They don't go fast. Here, our chain of command is I talk to the chairman of the parent company and we decide what we're going to do. It's that simple. I go there once a month, I spend a week in China, and we talk about what we're going to do. So we're incredibly agile. We can make decisions very fast. And those decisions are flowed down to our business unit. So it's remarkable. We're not the bottom guys anymore. Certainly we're not Boeing or Airbus, right? And I don't know if we ever even aspired. But we're in this kind of sweet spot, right? Do what you want to do, be successful, and we'll fully fund what you're doing. So it's a tremendous place for us to be, right? Really very good.
Problems we see or exist with our current relationship with China?
Right now it's costing us. The additional tariffs cost us when we ship parts here. But I'm anticipating that's not going to last very long. And the reason, again, is Boeing. Right? Boeing manufactures parts for their airliners all over China. They ship more than $1 million a day from China to Seattle. So those are the guys who are in Washington now lobbying to say, we're not going to absorb 25% tariff. Right? On the other side, we have no pressure to give up our technology or anything like that. Right? We own our own IP rights. We're a U.S. corporation that is wholly owned by a Chinese company. Right? So there are actually firewalls. We're working now with NASA to allow us to use some of their facilities. And their first response was, oh, no, we don't give any of that intellectual property to China. And what it turned out was, as long as there's a firewall in place, we're an American company, we can participate with NASA, the FAA, and those guys. So,
has the military been knocking on your door?
Not while I know. I know in the past they have had that that discussion. Honestly, it's a difficult engineering effort. It's a difficult effort to be involved in the military. As I've been in this business, I've been in helicopters for 35 years. And I've always been in the commercial side of the business because the military side is too hard. What else can I tell you? Bill, you want to talk about the work? Thank you, Paul.
As Chris said, I'm Phil Mateer. I've been the chief test pilot from the beginning with the concept car and with our second generation. We have 200 hours, over 200 hours in here on the second generation. Plattsburgh, Pease, we've been flying out of, and then the last year we put 100 hours in the airplane out of Lawrence. I've been working with Chris Lynch and his team since last year, I think, when we first started doing our airport. So thank you. We've been peppering them with hundreds of questions. What about this? What about that? And, tonight I'm going to tell you about our proposed operation at the National Airport. Okay, I'm going to describe the operation of the National Airport, what we're going to do at Hangar 101, and I'm going to list some approvals we're looking for from the National Airport Authority, and some assistance requested, and then we're going to talk about the future a little bit, about what that might look like. So, the first thing we're going to do in Hangar 101, we're fixing to finalize the lease on the 1st of August and move in and open up the flight operations. So what does that mean? The first thing is our flight test vehicle. So we have three on the books right now. The first one being made in Woburn. Second two will come off the production line, final assembly in Woburn. We'll be flying three flight test vehicles. So similar operations to what we've been doing on the Lawrence and Plattsburgh over the last several years. The driving vehicles, as Chris talked about, will start in the fourth quarter of this year. Doing some driving testing. Talked a lot with Chris Lynch and the team about this. Airport auto rules in the non-movement area. When we get to the movement area, the aircraft rules. As soon as we get moved in, we're going to meet with the power folks and work out the details. Like I said, we've been doing this at Lawrence. Commissioner, talked to the airport manager. We worked out the aircraft have the right of way, but we would like to be doing driving. That's one of the things that we asked in the meeting. Can we do that? It's one of the reasons we chose Metro. There'll be support aircraft, chase aircraft, and formation flying, any airport new formation flying. And we have a chase response truck and work that in also. The second thing we're going to be doing here at Nashville then, and this will start probably about the second quarter of next year, is production acceptance testing. As the vehicles roll off the final assembly line, Woburn, we'll truck them up here and do a production acceptance testing, some driving, and then a flight regime for production acceptance testing. And that's going to be eventually work up to two vehicles a week, and starting in the third quarter of 2019. Third thing is marketing operations out of Metro. One or two vehicle space here, customer, media, potential aircraft sales location, and that's a plan to happen out of the facility. Finally, there's some probable operations that we'll contract for out of Nashua, a factory authorized maintenance and repair center, customer flight instructions, and we might have multiple vehicles spaced here for that. Now, for one of the things we've been asked about is that commercial operations really don't start until aircraft sales. So we're not going to apply for the commercial operations side until we get into aircraft sales for that as well. All right. Approvals we're looking from the Airport Authority. We're looking for the approval for the operations proposed on that last slide. The Hangar 101 sublease. We're going to ask for a land lease between 101 and 99, and we eventually will come back with some Hangar 101 build-out site plans and approval. Okay, the land lease between the two buildings. Can we do quick changes to the aircraft? We have been doing that out of the ramp in places. We have to adjust the steering, pull the hood off. We don't like the hood off out in the ramp in public, so having an area there between where we can pull in real quick without having to go in the hangar, pull the hood off, make a change, those kind of things. So we could use it for that. We may use it for, eventually, if you have multiple chase aircraft, if we really have three tests, so a place for a chase aircraft to land and pull up and get ready for the briefing. We originally were talking about and asked Chris's team a lot about a full vehicle test facility to actually be able to run the vehicle indoors. We're doing that at Woburn, but it's modular. Someday that could move up there. And we think we're going to fill that hangar pretty quick, so we're going to ask for them. Just alerting you to that. The next thing is some parking spaces we're going to ask for. This is the site plan. There are existing parking spaces out there for Building 99 that are on the east side of the hangar. There's a picture of them from the air, a small picture, but you can actually see them there. What we would like to do is mirror those at different places around Hangar 101 on the east and west side. What that would look like, those are those circles. So we're asking that the team to put the mirror of those in those places. And finally, we have talked a lot about doing different things with Hangar 101. So Chris's team has answered many different questions. They probably don't know what our plan is. We're not going to put a second story on it. That's one thing we've talked about. But we will come to you with some build-out plans. Most of it's probably going to be inside. Possibly a deck on the first floor. So I'm going to pause at this section on the four things we just asked about and just give the operation proposal of this presentation. Do we have to do anything else other than talk to the tower guys to say, following this meeting, we're going to follow up on this?
What about DOT?
Well, they're going to eventually have to meet with the Department of Transportation. You've already talked to Carol, I believe, correct?
Yes. This is commercial operations issues.
Department of Transportation, the DOT, she's our FAA person. Have you talked to her about any concerns she might have?
No. I will take an action to get there.
Sure
that's Carol Nirola.
Yeah,
I gave you her.
Carol.
Yep.
She's the federal DOT
She's the New Hampshire DOT Bureau of Aeronautics senior planner.
Yes, we've talked to her. Her questions were more in the beginning when we were asking about building things up here and doing the final assembly up here and those kind of things. Right now, we're just doing standard aircraft operations that are approved for any airport. And the driving operation for the operator under your rules under that. So I will check back if there's a yes. I'll talk to the person.
So as Phil has been meeting with me over the past year, I spoke with Brian in the tower, and we talked about the type of operations they would be doing. And Brian said, you know, if an airplane needs a runway and they're doing taxi operation, we simply ask them to exit the runway. and it's that easy. So in terms of the tower, they will go up and meet with them, but so far Brian sees no issues with it.
When we started with Lawrence, we put a person up in the tower. We could do that here, but it's pretty soon they said, you know, listen, you're doing everything according to, you know, according to rules, so there's really nothing different about it. Hangar 101 sublease. I heard some discussion. Is there anything else you need from us and the team?
Simply a proposal to the board. And
wouldn't that mostly be between Terra Fugia and Stein?
Correct. But they have, when they bring in new tenants, they bring it before the board.
Okay.
What I'm requesting is board approval to allow us to sublet.
To allow you to sublet, yes.
You're
not looking for an extension, anything like that. Everything is in place. The time frame that you're
correct.
Looking for.
What's the current expiration?
I'm sorry?
What's the current expiration on? One.
What do you mean?
When is it
the land lease? I don't. Mark, do you know what that date is? I don't recall.
Oh, no, is it well out into the future? Or? It's
20-year renewal, so.
Yeah.
Two,
yeah, I don't think that's. Yeah, it's not an issue with this.
I can find it. Let me look for it. But I know that there's 20-year
renewal, but I don't know. I think the point is just a sublet, no new lease, no new term.
Right.
No. The
only new lease that they're asking for is the next item up there is the land lease. Between 101 and 99, in between 101 and 99, there's a small portion of that in between the two buildings that's not within that, I think it's a 20-foot buffer on each building, and they would like to lease that entire area there so that they can bring their cars in there for work, pit stops.
This is a pit stop.
And I spoke with Steve Bolton this morning about this, and I was trying to get Steve to come to the meeting, but he had other commitments, and he said, it's basically like any other lease, and it shouldn't be an issue at all. We'll just plot out the land, and Steve will write the lease up.
Who's in 91? Is that Peter too?
Yeah.
Where?
It's Kim. So if that answers your question, I spoke with Steve Bolton, the city attorney who represents the airport, and he will draw that lease up.
So we just submit the lease to you. We have to come back and work forward on that.
No.
The same with the sublease for 101. So those drivers are covered from our perspective. And
you're all fine with that, right?
Make a motion.
Does it interfere at all with the best plan for the area?
I don't think so.
No. Armin?
Do you have any future plans for perhaps finding a place to manufacture in Nashville?
Future plans are down.
So, are you going to make a motion then?
So basically the two action items we can probably make a motion on, or I'll make a motion, is approval of the sublease of existing tenant to Terra Fugia, and the establishment of a new land lease for the space between 99 and 101.
Okay, discussion. Okay, so motion is on the table and has been seconded for a Hangar 101 sublease and for Steve Bolton to develop land lease language for between 101 and 99. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Now the parking, I think this is one of the reasons I asked Armin to join us this evening. This is Armin Dufresne, represents Gale Engineering Associates. And he's our airport engineer. And so, Armin, if you could chime in on this a little bit.
It's hard to assess just looking at it from here, but I mean, as long as they're not interfering with taxi lanes, I don't have a problem with it. That would be the only consideration. Can't block off taxi.
Are there any aircraft clearance issues there? Any kind
of there's no aircraft coming in on, like where that circle is right there. That's comes in the main gate, gate
right.
12, you drive through there, if I'm seeing this correctly, I believe I am. There are existing spots there right now.
Building 99101, gate 12 is here, and you can see their parking spots on their side, and the buildings are lined up
yep.
together. We just want to mirror them here, and look at the west side also. So just,
I guess I'd be more concerned with the west side because there are hangars opposing that 101 building there, that there are aircraft that taxi in and out of there.
There is a good amount of grassing
against the building. It's like a 6 foot, I believe.
They,
yeah.
You know, it's probably don't look at like very easily. Very
close. How many parking spaces?
I would say seven on each side.
What about
it?
Yeah. Oh, there are. You can see them right there. Yeah, they kind of faded away. They don't really get used. Yeah. Right, but there's nobody's been parking.
Well, not parking there.
Right. Yeah. But
they give
you the
seat. Yes.
Yeah.
You're brave.
It's only the restaurant owner.
No, FedEx and UPS.
Yeah.
So you're getting around.
Chris, what is the lift between 99 and 101? What were you talking about the wall for wall post? What's the status of that lift? I mean, between 99.
Well, that's what we just spoke about. We're going to draw up a lease for that.
No. Remember when you talked about connecting the buildings at one point, would that be helpful between the two buildings? That triple link?
For parking. Yes, but that's also that's what we've been talking about. We want this triple link.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Right in there.
But you potentially add a building here.
Well, yes, that's what they approved.
Okay. But I didn't know if you wanted to elaborate. Yeah.
Yes, I went through a series of operations of things that we would like to use that potentially for.
Okay.
Between.
And while we have Armin here, Armin, there's no reason those two buildings couldn't be eventually joined if they ended up leasing or purchasing 99 as well. Okay. Which is, I know that was one of your questions a while back. Yeah. So.
That's why I brought it up.
Yeah.
I think we're all in the same
room. Right.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
No. Okay, good. Thank you.
I didn't want to give you any misinformation. That's why we brought Armin in tonight.
Yeah,
is it worth me trying to get online and do the Google alert to look at these buildings as well, or did you take that offline? How do we get to the answer on the parking places is my basic question.
I would suggest taking that offline.
Okay.
Magic finders.
I called them earlier.
Right there.
Yeah.
We just want to match those here and here. And we realized that
here, right?
Yes, the doors are there, so we put however many would fit there, and then the doors are here, so we put however many would fit there.
You just wrote, though. Can I the right place here?
Right, we have to provide a site plan for approval. So we weren't asking for approval, I was asking for
those.
If
you have people coming out of the hangar, yeah, thank you.
And I know there's a good sized twin over there too. There's an Aerostar based right over there.
And the architect draw two site plans this way. Let's just wait until we hear what site plan you want us to submit. So we do have a proposed site plan.
Chris, these are legitimate parking spaces.
Yes, absolutely.
They're just not used.
Right, they used to be used. And
yeah, we may.
And this is where the traffic is, right?
On correct.
Yeah, how come you guys don't park there? Is there a reason why you don't park right there?
We just don't have the need.
Right.
The only time I use it is if you folks are having some big event or the folks whatever doesn't hang next door to you.
Yeah.
They may fill up the outside parking lot, then they're going to work.
Can we speak with them?
Phil, your architect called me the other day, and I didn't get back to him on this because I couldn't really picture what he was getting at, and I wanted to see, this is what I needed to see. And we needed to talk about it in person.
The only question is, the Archer Street area,
That's on the northwest side of that mountain. The Topa area over here is this we're talking about?
I was
thinking right, yeah, that's what I was saying, because it's like an arrow star that's based in the air. That is still quite a large area.
Yeah.
Right, like Kim said, there's grass all the way up to there, so it almost makes sense that you fill in all the parking space.
Well, I think there's a way.
Yeah, but it's there.
I don't think it's there.
Right, they want to block the door.
I think this is a enough bolts for...
Yeah, I think we're getting into a little too much detail right now for this discussion.
Thank you.
We'll get a response on what is doable in the site plan at future meetings. Alright. So, the assistance requested from NASA to talk about remote operation of the Gate 12. Sorry, this is small. We expected it to be up there. So, same picture. Here's the gate. We're right here. We can see anybody that needs an escort. But we would like to be able to remotely operate that gate, let them in, come down, and park in those spots we just talked about. There's other places where you have the phone dial up, you got a number.
Right.
So they would call us, we'd identify who they are, open the gate, they need an escort, step out.
This is what he's requesting, as we discussed, is the same thing that's down at the Infinity Gate.
Right.
And you can basically call anybody on the airport that's in the system. And they can buzz them in, so to speak.
I'll take one of them. It's a different line. It is, you have to have...
Right, you have to put a whole run of line to it.
Yeah, because then you know it's now consolidated. It doesn't even move.
Consolidate communications,
yes.
Yes,
for the outdoor line.
So it's doable,
it's
yeah.
It's doable,
yeah.
Yep. What we're getting at is Building 99 has access from outside the fence. We don't, so that's why we need those parking spots and they don't. We need that remote access.
Mm-hmm.
So is that an action item to do it, or where do we go from here?
I think that's another nuts and bolts, right, in terms of...
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we need to vote upon.
There's right. Some money that needs to be paid for a contractor to come run some wires and do some things. And
so,
right.
Yeah. So we don't want to vote on that?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll proceed on that.
Well, isn't there some equipment required also, like...
Yeah,
it'd be all part of the, yeah.
Now, Chair, if you would do the class for that line, what do you need that?
You'd have to, that's an item of negotiation.
Okay.
How bad wants here, how bad, you know,
okay.
Yeah.
Start high, go low.
Okay. We just have to be done.
I'm sure a speaker and a couple of wires is not a showstopper.
Well, Susan's right. There's an expense associated
sure.
with
always
it.
Always watching the dollar.
Right.
Always watching the dollar.
As you saw, we watched that dollar pretty good in the last year.
Well, get them all the costs out on the table and see what they are. And
that's right.
But yes,
I'm telling my marketing people to keep the $10,000 a year. Right in line with what I'm thinking about.
To answer your question, it's doable. It's done elsewhere on the airport, and there's no reason we can't do it right there.
So the last thing we request assistance is the identification of potential sites for therapeutic facilities, and I'm going to tell you what we're looking at in the future here on another slide.
Transitions are all usual colors.
The transition vehicle final assembly, we're planning to do that mover. That was a question before. We asked a lot of questions about this final assembly here, so we prefer mover. So I know you'd be disappointed about that, but and then we'll truck one here. I mentioned that before. However, the TF2 prototype final assembly hasn't been determined. We would prefer naturally to use the TF2 prototype final assembly. So we're going to build the parts mainly out of mover and design, but we would prefer to do that. Then we got the TF2 prototype research and development testing. So there's at least three prototypes coming before we get to production on the TF2 concept. We would like a research and development. We prefer Nashua. We expect that FAA would approve us to do initial ground testing and hover testing here. Then we'd have to go to someplace like Rome. They have a UAS test site out there to get the vehicle flying and transitioning, and then we would like to transition back once the FAA would let us back to Nashua. So just letting you know, because we're asking for assistance in finding space for these things. And then the final thing is TF2 production, up to 1,000 vehicles a year. There's no location selected yet. Several cities and states have lobbied us for this. Just to let you know the lay of the land, is New Hampshire interested? And we throw that question out there. Is naturally interested, and this is where you could help us understand building sites or plans. I know you're working on a master plan, and you get some kind of a document that we, you know, we go here, here, and here. This is up to 1,000 vehicles a year.
It's a significant size facility. You're producing 20 air vehicles a week.
But you're not asking us to have that on the airport, right? The actual construction?
Final up there.
Tell me that you couldn't do it on the airport.
No. Would you like to have it on the airport if you could?
Yeah. Is that 100,000 square foot building? Okay. There's no place on the airport to put it. That's, I regret to say that.
So the question is, yes, is that a 100,000 square foot building? And I think the answer is larger. And you know, what's the concern if there's no place on the airport where we could put that building?
Was does the law company have some face over there?
This is the first time that
200,000.
You might have seen some of this. They sat in, we've been talking to Kristen's team presenting these things, and there was representative there from
that. Was that Tim? Was he?
Yeah, Tim
was
coming.
Office,
yep. Okay. Tim was there. We spent the day with Tim.
And he's cracking something out. He's thinking about it. He's looking.
It was presented to him.
I'll be with
him
Friday.
We did go over and look at the old Building 19, which would just take a taxiway across the river. That's for sale. A lot of property there. That facility is not sufficient. Has to find the city has to do something. Anyway,
the city went. They went after the Reserve Point Walmart on went there about the grant runoff to the streams and it's an environmental wide man.
So, Phil, there's a gentleman in the audience here. Brian, we haven't met. I'm Chris Lynch. He has some real estate right on the other side of the tracks here as well. I think you just said a 200,000 square foot building.
Well, we have two buildings that are over 100,000 square feet. It means crossing tracks.
He'll be on the board shortly and he can, did you get a?
Can you explain what the issue is about crossing the railroad tracks?
I don't think it's the railroad tracks. I think that the Building 19 site is surrounded by wetlands and there's a whole bunch of.
Well, the railroad can be difficult, if
you
put it that way.
Fly over.
Actually,
hover over.
The big push on Building 19 from Walmart was the traffic,
right?
And the gasoline and stuff, the vehicles going into the ground, and they wanted to put a superstore there.
So that's something we have to think about. Look, got some realtors here.
The question is,
we're not making a proposal, we're just telling you, we're looking. Yeah. Other people, Keene says they got a nice facility downtown that they're looking up, you know, that kind of thing. So.
And I'm here, like people as far away as South Carolina have called.
I think Mark Perlman can attest to the fact that there's a lot of real estate available in Nashua that could accommodate a facility like this in proximity to the airport.
That's got
to
be someplace where we can
play, right?
Don't know if the air gets you going
99
from the road.
Well, what keeps you in the high-tech state and town pool?
From the perspective where we wanted to be near the universities down there to attract that kind of engineering talent, MIT's right down the road, and the Sloan Business Development Section of MIT was involved in the prize that these guys won. So they wanted to be in that part, and the kind of people who want to hire. These are the guys. I'm the test pilot, so. You guys at the end of the hiring. What do you think?
Have you guys talked to some of the Hampshire though?
About
New Hampshire University? Have you been in any discussions with them about thoughts or ideas or collaborating with them?
Or? Have not. We recruit all of them. I had lunch with the interns at OS yesterday. A dozen kids who came from as far away as the West Coast and Georgia Tech and a bunch of Wentworth University and that kind of stuff, right? So we recruit from everywhere. We don't segregate, but haven't had any specific discussions with anybody from Southern New Hampshire.
Our staffing right now, I think we're somewhere, as Chris mentioned, it's hard to keep track, 90 to 100 people from that September. And there's broad diversity in the towns that people come from, folks from Rhode Island, Southeastern Mass, Maine, New Hampshire, Western Mass, a variety of folks.
So just an FYI, SNHU has just recently embarked upon a formal pilot training program. They want to do something similar that like a UND or an Embry-Riddle is doing, but in a little more compressed time frame and for less money. So they are they're just starting that program. It's just ramping up now. I think that might be what prompted your question.
It's based at Nashua.
If you guys have somebody contacted, you have to call whoever the contact is.
I think Nashua Airport is interested. New Hampshire is interested.
Answer your question about why we're right. It's where the company has been located, right? And honestly, with the speed that we're moving, it's a lot of work to move. In this case, I need a facility at an airport. I need to operate. I need to fly because we're a flying business, right? But in order for me to uproot 100 people and go somewhere else, or even back when we were starting, we didn't have any idea how fast we'd grow, how big we'd be, right? Logistically, it's a nightmare. You're basically stopping your operation to move. Right?
For a first startup, we did that.
And let me tell you, the pressure for us to deliver the product is not putting me in a position where I can afford to stop for a day, So eventually we'll outgrow that facility. In fact, we're stretching it now. We've already expanded once, and in October we're going to take over the rest of the facility. We'll have, 50, 60, 70,000 square foot of space there between shop space and office space, right? And I can't slow down, right? So, yeah, sooner or later I'll outgrow it and I'll leave the facility. And that day is not that far away, a year, something like that. But for the time being, I just keep putting more cubes in and hiring more people.
Will you be marketing your own aircraft, or will you be looking at automobile dealerships?
The answer is we're going to start marketing our own vehicle. And then it just depends on demand. Right? The two vehicles that I talked about today are very different, right? One is a general aviation kind of operation that, at least initially when we're at low rate production, we'll be doing all the marketing for it, and probably owning some of them and operating them, right? The second generation vehicle is very different. It's fleet operations, right? You can't sell those at car dealerships. You're selling to airline type operators, right? So that's all coming from a core business unit. Right? So the answer is not that easy. Probably in the future, we'll be doing a different kind of business for the transition for the smaller aircraft, but I think you'll never see it move away from the core company for the next generation vehicle.
Similar to how Tesla operates, they don't have any dealerships.
Well, and then for the first vehicle, that may well be what we transition, what we move to, right, for sales. Internet, shopping malls, who knows, But today's sales system is very different from the past.
I'll close my session with a personal story. Right after our first flight of the second vehicle, we went to the New York Auto Show on Manhattan. And we figured, New York's a big city, nobody would care that much about us. We just got swamped at that show. It was amazing. The Mercedes guys, the Land Rover guys, they were flying everybody around here, and we didn't have enough space where we were at. I'm out for lunch, and there I am on the TV, the local station, and people actually see it. And I go back to the hotel that night, and I'm on a bike, and the local news is on there, the local New York City news, and it comes up on Channel 6 News, and there was George Jetson across the top of the screen. We've been wanting a flying car for how long, and how many people in the U.S. always can do this? Regulate, we can do it. We're Americans, we can fight through that stuff. We need a flying car. We're going to start it, and hopefully right here out of Nashville. We appreciate the support you've given. I look forward to a productive relationship. Thank you.
Okay. with that, upcoming events, that's already been covered by Chris. And we're down to public input. Going once, going twice.
Great.
Okay. Director Thomas, I'll start with Bob.
No, I put during input, I put on this one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I did. I'm going to be retiring soon. And just like you, Sandra. And I'm not Karen taking my decision. He'll still be your planner, but he'll also direct you.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll hang around for another few months just to make sure that Francis, you know, it's smooth transition. But I figured I'd let you know. We'll have an official announcement probably the 1st of August. So
well, congratulations.
Yep, congratulations, Simon.
Any more public input? Okay, Director Simmons, Bob, please.
Well, I just have to say I'm impressed. I need to get my checkbook out here.
They've got a square, right?
I'm thinking like garage. I just say, you know, welcome, welcome, welcome. I think, you know, there's no question we would welcome you enthusiastically.
Okay, I'll be next. So, you know, welcome to Nashua. I'm pretty sure we can work out some arrangement that's going to work for both of us. And you know, I'm excited to see you folks here. And I think this will be, you know, good for you folks. It will be good for the airport. It will be good for the city. And hopefully we'll have some healthy discussions about the production numbers you were talking about, with the TF2. So. I'm looking forward to that. And, Armin, congratulations. And, we're going to miss you. But we'll also look forward to Matt taking over for you and continuing to work with us.
I'm sure there's a little French up.
Well, if you know if he does.
So, thank you. Joe?
Just to echo those same thoughts, awesome, really cool stuff. It's even a little bit of a tangent that we're over here to be kind of involved at a ground level with something like this. It's I'm in the engineering and automation sector myself on a much more boring side, but I do get to see technology and how it's just crazy impacts on society and what it's doing and how it's making life faster, exponentially faster and more everything. So. This is a great thing. The first thing I heard of when I originally heard of this was the Taylor Aero car and thought, oh, flying car, okay. I can't wait to see the spin on this, but that's really, it looks awesome, and I'm sure we're going to have a great relationship for a long time. So welcome, and thanks for the great info.
Thank you.
Thanks, super.
With that, I don't think we have any...
Remember? So I do want to say welcome. This is really exciting. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on at the airport, and I'm so happy to see it. It's been a while, and it's thrilling. So the favor I want to ask you is make sure if you need something, want something, just ask. You know, come to us. Don't get frustrated and not let us know.
Thank you.
Come to the restaurant, I'll spread the gospel.
Already been there.
Definitely, keep in touch and let us know what you need. Southern New Hampshire, Chris and I and Phil and Susan, we met with Southern New Hampshire University, and we've been kind of, communication was a little rough at first, and now we have this great meeting. It's really, really good and very positive. So there's a lot of big changes. So we welcome you. The commemorative Air Force, like Chris said, it was amazing. Wonderful people, a lot of fun. My husband and I bought a raffle ticket, raffled it off. The guy who won it couldn't use it. So he asked us to draw a second name, and it happened to be a kid whose birthday it was coming up on Tuesday. Thrilled. So that was great, and we bought a second seat. And I think a lot of a lot of the airport people got to have little tours of it, so that was nice, and we welcomed them back. And the radio station, like Chris said, George was a lot of fun, and it was great for him to come out here and support the airport. Brian Law will be on the board very shortly, as far as I know. He's a great guy, and he'll be a big help, I'm sure. Dave Heath, I don't think any of you guys have had a chance to meet him, but he's on the board, but he has prior commitment tonight. So, and he's big into marketing, so hit him up for our new marketing budget, see if he can help.
We're going to get some hats, Steve.
I wanted to, it's my husband's birthday tonight, so I want to say happy birthday to him. He's in the tower tonight, so he's one of the guys you'll be talking to. Yes, what?
Is this your last meeting?
It will.
It sounds like a departure speech.
I actually, my daughter's getting married the week of our next meeting. So unless we can move the meeting.
Are we doing an August one? I know Mike is.
Well, usually we
skip July, but we didn't want to skip July because these folks were going to be here. I'm not sure if anyone is amenable to moving the meeting up or not.
I always skip August.
Usually we skip
August. Yeah. Well, then this will be my last meeting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
See how that works?
Oh. I feel like a pawn.
So, do you want to skip August, or do you think that there's something that we need to do? Or, Chris, will you be on vacation if we move the meeting?
I move it to when? I'm going to be on vacation the first week in August.
Can anyone do the second week, or do you want to skip? I mean, let me know. Susan, do you know the 11th? Can anyone do the
11th? While we're chit-chatting, and I know this is director comment time, and I'm not a director, but I'd like to welcome Terrafusia. We've had some great meetings since day one. Phil and I talked on the phone probably 100 times, and then we all met, and I think this is one of the biggest things to hit the Nashua Airport ever, and this is going to put us on the map globally, and I think this is great for the airport, and I wish you the best of luck, and like we've all said, we're here for you. If you ever need anything, you all have my cell phone number. Call me anytime.
Well, you're going to hear the name of Nashua Airport pretty frequently in our press releases and the things that we do on TV and that sort of thing, right, as soon as next week.
Great.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, because there's thousands of people in Nashua that don't know there's an airport.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Sitting right here in this room for another meeting, and I said, I'm Bob Chappell from Nashua Airport. Sorry.
please state your name for the record.
Mark Baldwin. I just want everybody to know that Chris Lynch is an outstanding man in business with the Airport Authority, has a good man here, and we've spent hours together in this field. And I want to thank Chris. And
thank you.
I want y'all to know you've got a good man here.
Did you get that right?
We'd like to say just a couple things. First, thank you very much for your support tonight. We really appreciate it. But let me say also that Phil is the most thorough guy you'll ever meet. I know he drives people crazy, but that means that when I gave him an assignment to go look around Woburn, we drew a circle, not south of Boston, but to the west, to the north, right? Where could we go locate? And I think he visited every airport in like a 50-mile radius, right? He talked to everybody. And we settled on this location as really being the ideal place for us to be, based on his thorough research. So we're thrilled to be here. We really think this is the best place for us, right? It's not just it's 30 minutes from where we live, right, or where we work. It's the right place for the business. So I think we're really happy that we're coming here. And the business is going to grow. We're going to immediately put people here, right? The businesses around here are going to see it. You're going to see our vehicles flying. It's going to attract more business, I think, right? So it's really a win-win. But I really appreciate your support tonight.
Nashua was just rated the safest city in the United States. And it was the ninth best managed city in the United States.
Well, congratulations.
I had one oddball question that just occurred to me. the government get to double dip with both aircraft registration and license plates on them?
Yeah, the insurance companies do.
Yeah. Insurance would be the killer.
Yeah, funny.
But we're bringing the coolest thing on earth here, right? You got to love it,
right? Yeah, exactly.
The first one's got to be called the Jetson.
So a question for the board members here. The second Wednesday happens to be August 8th. The first Wednesday is August 1st.
Oh, is the 15th?
The 15th would normally be our meeting day.
Chris, will you be on vacation that week?
What is the date?
August 8th.
That's the second week?
That's the second
Wednesday. The first is a Wednesday, so it's really the first full week.
It makes it kind of tough. Chris being out the week before for report.
That's why I think we normally skip a summer meeting.
Okay. Why don't we choose to skip August then, unless some pressing business comes, and then maybe we can do a special or something.
I don't know of anything pressing, Carl.
Okay. All right. Very well.
I could always adjust my vacation if I had to, if something came up.
Okay. So with that,
motion
to adjourn.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn to non-public session.
Hold on.
Well, that's it. This is your swan song. I would just like to say thanks.
Make a motion to adjourn public session, go into non-public to discuss personnel.
Second.
We're going to go. Do you want to go to non-public? Is there something that needs to be?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's a roll call.
Yes.
Chris.
Roll call.
Oh, sorry. Yes. That's recording.